There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
The Grill will be taking their summer sojourn over the next couple of weeks. We won't be down here live from Barasti. Some big news, though, for all of you that are aficionados of all things at the Grill. Worry not, we're not going that far. In fact, we'll be heading down to Dubai Sports City for the duration of the Cricket World Cup, where we'll be bringing you a Grill special, a Cricket World Cup special from Kickers down at Dubai Sports City throughout the next couple of weeks. So more details of that to follow from tomorrow right here on Dubai Eye 103.8. Little teaser for you on that one. Talking of Cricket World Cup, we're into day three, the first double header of games to look forward to today. Aussies against Afghanistan a little later on, but ongoing at the moment, New Zealand against Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka have been bundled out by New Zealand for 136 runs after 29.2 overs. The Sri Lankan captain Karunaratne carried his bat through, in fact 52 not out, which was hats off to him. And the bowling for New Zealand, every bowler has picked wickets. Matt Henry with the best figures, 7 overs, 29 runs for 3 wickets. He opened the floodgates for New Zealand against Sri Lanka this afternoon.
Jocko's just made his way out onto court down in Paris.
He certainly has, yeah. The number one seed over at Roland Garros. He's taking on Salvatore Caruso, the Italian, and it's 1-1 on serve at the moment. Djokovic 40, love up in the first opening set of this round of 32 tie. Alex Serev, he's broken in his game against Dusan Lajovic. This one is in the fifth and final of the signing set. Zverev, the young German of whom many things are expected. He took a two set to love lead but was pegged back by his Croatian opponent, but he has got that break up in the crucial deciding set. Elsewhere, Roberto Bautista Agut is taking on Fabio Fognini, and it is two sets to one to Fabio Fognini. The Italian is also 3 love up in the fourth set at this moment in time. Later on, we've got Juan Martel, Del Potro, Dominic Thiem, and Gael Monfils all in action. Well, for the ladies, like I mentioned before, Simona Halep is already through, defeating Alessia Serenko 6-2, 6-1. And we're expecting on court very soon Naomi Osaka for her last round of 32 tie against Katerina Siniakova, while Serena Williams is also due on court later on this evening, around about 7:45 p.m. UAE time, against Sofia Kenin.
Let's get more details on the build-up to the big one, though, which is the Champions League final, the UEFA Champions League final, which gets underway at 11 o'clock. It's live down here at Barasti. If you're looking for somewhere to watch it, no need to book. It's just turn up and watch it either outside on the beach, on the big screen down there, or in their air-conditioned tent area, which has been erected not just for this particular game, but for all the games, the Cricket World Cup and all the sport throughout the course of the summer. It's the Champions League final. You don't really need to get much more excited.
There's Lucas Moura. Oh, they've done it! I cannot believe it! They caught Barcelona naked!
Son with another chance, and Son with another goal! And it goes towards Mane, that's it!
Chance for Harry Kane. Oh, he's taken it!
Nice thing is, when you come to the end of your season down here at Barasti on the Grill, and when you come to just one game to focus on, you can take your plethora of sporting experts and give them sort of specialised zones as well. So that man over there, Robbie Greenfield, who usually has to look over an entire league or some of that, or an entire sport worldwide, has been looking...
I'm marking just one man.
Marking one man. You've been picking through the words of Poch to see if you can bring your psychology, his psychology, to bear. What's he been saying in the lead up to this game?
Well, let's find out what he's been saying. And first and foremost, let's doff our collective hats to Mauricio Pochettino, who didn't sign a single player last summer and has managed to navigate the pitfalls of the Champions League from a disadvantageous position. I might say in the group stages they were struggling at one point, were Tottenham. I think they were only on 1 point after 3 games played, and now they find themselves in the final. Mauricio Pochettino up against Jurgen Klopp. Two men with a lot of mutual respect for each other, and Pochettino has been talking about how much he has for the German.
Jurgen is a very successful manager. I admire him a lot. He's great. He's great. He's always happy. He's optimistic. He's a very good example for... I think he's spontaneous. He's natural. I like a lot. And it is a little bit unlucky. But I think the people judge because you lose the finals. For me, you need to judge. It's the third time that it's going to arrive in the final. I think the most difficult thing is to arrive to the final. And then it's a lot of circumstance, how you arrive, that is going to be decisive. Thing that you cannot control, like a manager, you know, and you need to trust that the universe conspired and made you, yes, lift the trophy. And sometimes it's with you, and sometimes it's against you. But that is obvious that Jürgen is a fantastic coach, and to arrive in the third personal final on the Champions League, I think is chapeau, and of course, congratulations. Happened what happened, for me, is going to be always one of the best managers. I admire him a lot.
Speaking in riddles there, Mauricio Pochettino, he does have a way with words, he really does. And I think what is clear is that he does admire Jurgen Klopp, his counterpart in this particular match, an awful lot. And he's got his own headaches to deal with, has Pochettino, because the man that got him to, or at least got Spurs to, the Champions League final, Lucas Moura, is by no means assured of a starting place in that 11. Harry Kane has recovered from that persistent injury. He's back training. He says he's ready. He said a week ago that if the match was last week, he could have played it then. He's very much expected to start as England's talisman. And Mauricio Pochettino says that it will be tough to provide that final selection.
It's not going to be easy to take a decision tomorrow, but it was difficult the last game that we played, the semifinals, the quarterfinals, the last 16. In every single game, you need to take a decision. But tomorrow is going to be another decision, a decision that for sure that we have all the information, that we know every single detail, and we are going to take the best decision to try to win. Like always in football, it's so painful when this type of game arrives and you can use from the beginning only 11 players. You know, that is the most painful situation.
We did consider giving Danny Norton and Mauricio Pochettino to study throughout the week. We thought that was, well, just be cruel and unfair. So you've got Jurgen Klopp. What's your man been saying?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't mind Pochettino as well, because, yeah, a lot of respect for him. What a job he's done as well. And I think a very similar kind of character to Jurgen Klopp. But Jurgen Klopp, I mean, does not exist anywhere else in the world a more perfect manager for Liverpool FC, for his personality, for the passion and the emotion he brings to the game. He just suits Liverpool. He suits Scousers. And one of the key things as well, what he's been saying, is that, you know, we're prepared 100%. We will try and give everything 90 minutes, give whatever you have and try and win it. And that echoes very much what he said in the programme notes of the semi-final second leg against Barcelona as well, when Liverpool going into it 3-0 down. But essentially he said the one thing that everyone knows about this Liverpool team is we will not stop for the whole 90 minutes. We will fight till the very bitter end as well, and that's what we will expect to see later on tonight. And this is a team that's been to the bitter end before, the very bitterness of losing the European Cup final 1 year ago, and the manner in which it happened, with the star man Mohamed Salah getting injured halfway through the first half there, and then a couple of real howlers from the goalkeeper Loris Karius, and an absolute wonder goal, an unstoppable goal from Gareth Bale, consigning Liverpool to a 3-1 defeat to Real Madrid a year ago. But Jurgen Klopp's been speaking and kind of reflecting on that game and saying that this team is different to that one 12 months ago.
If I would be the reason for losing six finals in a row, then everybody needs to worry, really. So if that's not the case, then we always have to have a chance, and that's how we see it, actually, that we go here, that we go in a situation where we learned not from the final, because there was not but three strange goals, a world-class goal of the year, and two more strange goals, which you usually don't concede, but we conceded them. Apart from that, it was a good game, so you have to accept that. No, but it's not to discuss it after the game. Big, you only accept it and go home. But we learned a lot in the time since we are together. With a lot of players, I'm together since 3 years. With some players, I'm together since a year. And this year, we learned a lot again. We are a completely different side to last year.
Interesting as well, just at the start of that clip there, this kind of losing record that he was referring to is his own losing record, although Liverpool, unfortunately as well, have kind of become perennial runners-up in recent years. But Klopp has lost his last six finals he's contested, but when it was put to him in the press conference about that, he said, well, I hold the world record then, don't I, for semi-final victory. So always kind of spinning it to a positive anyway. But looking ahead to tonight's final between his Liverpool side and the Tottenham Hotspur of Mauricio Pochettino, he simply says it's too close to call.
I would think Tottenham has an advantage. I would be mad. So, and if he would say, I think that one is on the Liverpool side, he would be mad as well. So think about it. We don't really think about it. It's not about having an advantage now. It's working for an advantage tomorrow. I know that people say probably this year we are the favorites because we have had much more points in the league. But if you saw the games against Tottenham, it was 2-1 both times, especially the home game. We won with a very strange goal, I would say. But we were always really good in both games. We were really good, and it was anyway only a 2-1. So there is no advantage before the game.
A lot of chat during the semi-finals about the influence of Divock Origi in that semi-final. But lest we forget the role that a certain Trent Alexander-Arnold also played in that game. How influential has he been?
Yeah.
Not just in those semi-finals, throughout the season.
Absolutely, he's been an absolute revelation, as has Andy Robertson, in all fact. But it was Trent Alexander-Arnold who spotted that Barcelona had just switched off, ran back. It was a little lovely little dummy from the corner. He ran back, he shot the ball across, and Divock Origi was on hand to fire it in past the Barcelona goalkeeper. And it was that speed of thought. Luis Suarez was prompted to say that Barcelona were playing like schoolboys afterwards, that you should never concede a goal like that. But it was just a wonderful piece of spontaneous thinking from Trent Alexander-Arnold. And these games are going to be decided. This game is going to be decided by perhaps a moment like that, perhaps a moment of quick thought, some quick incision, a beautiful piece of play. And it's going to boil down to very small details about who is going to be mentally tougher on the night, who's going to handle the scale and the size of the occasion better. And Trent Alexander-Arnold, in speaking, has been saying that past experience of these finals does give his team the edge.
I think in terms of Champions League and getting to the final and that, then yeah, they are, because obviously we got to one last year and they never. So clearly that in that fact, yeah. But in terms of quality, in terms of sides, then I think it's quite even. They've got world-class players, we've got world-class players, and tomorrow it's literally a fight till the end to see who wins and who wants it more. I think it'll be difficult for both sides. Both sides have the game plans, and I think it's fair to say that it'll be a really tactical game from both sides, and I'm sure whoever comes out on top will deserve it, and I'm sure the best team will win tomorrow.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because the Liverpool squad has really impressed me this year, because when you start talking about the big guns and the three men up front and their strike force that they've got, etc., it's just the ability that they've had to tap into a substitutes bench that you might not have a huge amount of knowledge of or respect for, and yet when they're asked to step up by Jurgen Klopp, they have done in the past. Shaqiri, you know, the influence he's had there throughout the entire season.
Absolutely. He's come on and scored some vital late goals in the Premier League. And what about Gigi Wijnaldum? I mean, a player that was as integral as Divock Origi in getting Liverpool those goals. An almost Gerrard-esque header off the first instance. A beautiful headed goal for his first, and a great finish for his second. A great piece of play where he just timed his run into the box to perfection, and he managed to finish strongly. So he's also going to be thinking, he's definitely going to be on the fringes of a starting place, probably not expected maybe to start, but we shall see. He's been speaking in the build-up to this game and hoping that he does manage to win a place in the starting 11.
Yeah, it's no guarantee to play for no one, but we will see.
When you came on, though, in that game against Barcelona, after being left out of the starting lineup, did you go out there feeling that you wanted to prove a point?
No, I was there, I came in. I was still angry, but that's normal. I think it's a bad sign if you're sitting on the bench and you're happy to sit on the bench. I think only if you come from an injury or something like that, then it's normal, because you, step by step, you make a bigger move in your rear. But I think I just want to play as much as possible, and especially in a game like that, you want to play. I think everyone will be disappointed. I think disappointed is a better word if they don't play. So I was disappointed, but at the end you also play in a team, and we have a team who supports each other. So you just do your job and trying to help the team to win the game. And when I come in, I was like, I'm gonna give my all, and at the end we will see what we're.
The Grill, live from Barasti, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now.
So New Zealand need 137 to win their World Cup opener against Sri Lanka, having skittled the Sri Lankans. Sri Lanka will be heavily reliant on the old slinger-malinger now as that game is about to get underway. Second innings about to start there. We've got a doubleheader today, in fact, down at the Cricket World Cup over in England and Wales, down in Bristol. The two A's going at it, and Monty's been watching the toss for us on this one. Yep. Afghanistan against Australia, how does it line up?
Yep, interesting team news. Well, David Warner starts for Australia. There was doubt whether he would be left out because of an injury. But it's also the big match for David Warner and Steve Smith ever since their ban, you know, for the match-fixing thing. And for Afghanistan, they're batting first, and they've left out their former captain, Asghar Afghan. So that's a surprise there. Yeah.
We'll keep an eye on that one for you. Does the New Zealand batsmen make their opening batsmen make their way down the steps for their reply? They need 137 over in Cardiff, Wales, to get the points from their first game of this year's Cricket World Cup. NBA playoffs ongoing at the moment. Danny Norton getting up nice and early to watch them.
Absolutely, yes. We had game one yesterday morning, and it was up in Toronto. The Toronto Raptors have home court advantage after winning one more game than the reigning champion Golden State Warriors during the regular season, and they took game one as well, 118 to 109. So a fantastic start for the huge underdog Toronto Raptors. Pascal Siakam was the man who led them to this victory as well. He's scored a playoff career high 32 points on this one. The Raptors also had 23 points from their star man Kawhi Leonard. Marcus Gasol also chipped in for 20 points. Meanwhile, for the Warriors, Stephen Curry scored 34. Klay Thompson had 21. It's the first time that the Warriors haven't won a game one in an NBA playoff series in the last 4 years as well. But all of those had come at home. But for once, Golden State do not have home court advantage. Let's hear now from Stephen Curry, the main man for the Golden State Warriors, who conceded that the Raptors outplayed the Warriors in game one, but he did remind everyone it's a long series.
You know, obviously the Bavs, we were down 0-1, but it's not the end of the world. You know, new experiences for us all the way through, but, you know, we've proven our resiliency and ability to win games that we need to and kind of answer the bell and learn from, you know, nights like tonight. So key call-outs or, you know, fast break points that they got, whether it was a make or a miss for us. You know, a couple sloppy turnovers that really didn't kill us, but just added to, you know, their momentum. And, you know, obviously Pascal had an amazing game. Pretty much found a bucket wherever he was at. And we got to do, all five guys got to do a better job of just being physical, being alert, and we'll be all right.
I mean, outside of the break, you guys don't really have that much tape to work off of with this Raptors team. I mean, I know you're very familiar with Kawhi Leonard. Did you think that posed a challenge as well?
Yeah, I mean, the two games we had during the regular season, there's guys missing them both nights and what have you, but I'm sure they're in the same situation, not really expecting or knowing what to expect. So the end of the day, they outplayed us. Like, there's no other way to kind of say it. They did what they were supposed to do and took care of home court on the first game. And you know, no matter what, you know, our sights were coming in, it's a long series, and to game two is an opportunity for us to right the wrongs and get a big win and go back home.
Sounds like he's half asleep, Steph Curry, in that press conference.
I think he was on court as well,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. That might have been the problem. I mean, it's great. I think it's great for the NBA that Toronto, this is their first ever NBA finals, and the Golden State Warriors have been a fixture in this final series for the last five. They've been dueling with the Cleveland Cavaliers of LeBron James up until this point. He's obviously signed for the Lakers, broken that team up. The Golden State Warriors are all-star, and they're back. They're up against probably a team that revolves around Kawhi Leonard, Danny. But you would never give them a prayer up against a fully fit Golden State Warriors. It's the Kevin Durant injury, which didn't seem to trouble them en route to these finals. Is that now starting to sort of play its part?
Perhaps so, but you just have to give credit to the Toronto Raptors for this game one win as well, and the actual fans themselves. They generated a fantastic atmosphere up there in Canada, even outside the arena as well. It was absolutely bouncing when you look at the pitches that were going around the place. They were up for this, like you say, 24 years in the making, for the first time the NBA Finals going outside of the United States. And yeah, for the first time in the 24-year history, the Toronto Raptors getting to the NBA Finals. So they're known as being passionate fans up there anyway, but especially so a couple of evenings ago there. And the Toronto Raptors, they got into a groove very early on. They took their chances. They built up a 10-point lead at halftime. And the Warriors are renowned for their third quarter pushes, for kind of pulling away from teams or for staging remarkable comebacks, and the Raptors just didn't let them do it. They just always kept that kind of gap of around about, you know, 8 to 10 points between them, and just stayed on top the whole way through. Siakam was key for that as well. Pascal Siakam, the star of the show, he went 6 for 6 in the third quarter for them. But you mentioned Kevin Durant there, and your question about whether the Warriors are missing him. It's hard to say when they've won every single game since he's been out injured in the playoffs, and they've kind of reverted back to the Dubs of old, and they're kind of moving the ball around, the kind of old school play. But you do have to question whether or not they could have really done with him, because he's been the NBA Finals MVP for the last 2 years as well. Let's hear now from Jalen Rose. He's a former Toronto Raptor himself, and he was speaking after the game saying the Warriors' lack of depth is a problem. But he also admits as well he was concerned with Kawhi Leonard. He was actually quite quiet in this game one.
Gentlemen, it's simple math. When you look at the Golden State Warriors, their initial motto when they started winning championships was strength in numbers. They were a really deep basketball team that could go 9 or 10 deep.
Mm-hmm.
They've been depleted. This ain't that same team. Now with those injuries, who's going to give you 15 to 20 plus points consistently on their team? I can rely on Curry. Mm-hmm. I can rely on Klay. I can rely on Draymond. I can't necessarily rely on nobody else to give me those numbers.
Let me ask you this. We know you played here in Toronto 3 years. We know you're very confident about your pick. But how important is it for the Raptors to win game two to keep this momentum going and seal the deal?
It's extreme. And I'm going to tell everybody something that people aren't discussing that actually is the only issue that I have with my pick. Kawhi Leonard don't even look healthy.
No, he doesn't.
Kawhi Leonard is out there gimpy. He's out there limping.
Don't have his legs.
He don't have his legs. A couple of times when he went to the basket, he went in there weak. Did you see how he went in there on Greek Freak and just banged on him?
Yep.
How he was banging on Joel Embiid? You go from the period of being hurt, where you feel like you can play through the pain, to getting closer to being injured.
Yeah.
And that's what I saw yesterday. Mm-hmm. And this period of time between games one or two, I guarantee you he's going to be getting a lot of treatment. I guarantee you they're going to try to make sure that he's at his optimum peak, because they need game two. Mm-hmm. If they're able to secure game two, KD's going to come back during this series. But the problem is when he does, it's going to be too late.
Mm-hmm.
He'll come back like game four. He'll come back like game five. But the Raptors are already going to have a stranglehold on the series.
I love American analysts debating this. My pick. It's Golden State Warriors. It's not exactly sticking your neck out, is it? What about Kevin Durant? Does he have to come back to get the Warriors over the line, Danny?
They don't need him, because this is the kind of, you know, all-star pack, like you mentioned before, Robbie, Golden State Warriors, with the likes of Steph Curry, the likes of Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, who had a poor game in all honesty as well. I think he's going to be much improved again too. He was defending Pascal Siakam, couldn't quite figure him out. I know he's going to do his homework. He's one of the most competitive stars, not only in the NBA, but just in the sport world in general. So they don't need him. But at the same time, if you've got like the two-time finals MVP there, who's guaranteed to add you at least 20 points, probably 30, then you're not going to say no either at the same time, are you? But the big question is, will he be back for game two? Let's hear now from the Warriors head coach Steve Kerr, who gave an update on the fitness of Kevin Durant.
The thinking is when he's ready to play, he'll play. It's not like, you know, this is a sore ankle, or, you know, his knee is sore or whatever, and you can play through it. And this is a tricky one. If you re-injure the calf, then that's it. And then he's done for the series. So when he's ready to play, he'll play, and that's our approach. Kevin's not going to play Sunday. Yeah, I guess we've been, you know, sort of holding out hope, but I might as well just say it now. He's not practicing today. You know, we'll have a practice tomorrow, but he's still progressing. It's near impossible for him to play on Sunday.
I suppose it's a long old series, though, isn't it?
It certainly is. Best of seven games, and this is the kind of the beauty, I suppose, of American sports. Certainly, like the likes of the NBA and Major League Baseball, and also the Stanley Cup as well, which is ongoing at this moment in time, is the fact that because it is a best of seven, you do tend to see the best teams win as well, and that's why I think the Warriors are still favourites. I mean,
Raptors have got Drake. Remember that?
What fun he was to watch as well. He was really getting involved. You know, he turned up in the jersey of one Del Curry, who's the father of Steph Curry, because Del Curry used to play for the Toronto Raptors back in the 90s when they first formed as well. So he came up, turned up in the number 30, which is the jersey number that Steph wears for the Warriors as well, to kind of maybe try and get in Steph's mind. And he exchanged words with him and with Draymond Green, who I've mentioned before, is quite a character. He's never averse to a little bit of controversy. And they exchanged words throughout the game itself, and even at the end of the game. Yeah. So he will try and play his part for the Toronto Raptors.
They debated Drake's contribution for about half an hour on ESPN as well. What did he say to Draymond Green?
It was just a tune and fro as well. I mean, Draymond Green was asked about it afterwards, tried to dismiss it. But, I mean, he's hilarious to watch because he does get so involved.
And then
he
started trolling them after the game and getting quite nasty on social media and things like that. And so you just sit back there on a Saturday morning and go, so that's all right for Drake to do it. Yeah. Is it anyone else in the world does it? And they get castigated as like a troll and an internet pest and things like that. But it's fine for Drake to do it.
I know. And you've got to question him though, haven't you? Because you're kind of pumping up what is the best basketball team of this era, arguably the best of all time, certainly a team that wants to be considered as such as well. So just giving them extra motivation. It'll be interesting to see how he goes about maybe trying to wind them up in game two as well. I can't see him kind of re-wearing that jersey from game one, but you never know anyway. But that was just a crucial win for Toronto. I think if they'd lost that opening game, I think it's pretty much series over. And I think even for game two, which is Sunday night US time, so early hours of the morning over here in the UAE. So tip-off will be around about 5 a.m.
Brilliant.
If you're up at 6, you can catch at least the second half of the
Just when you're coming down from your Liverpool celebrations, eh?
Well, let's hope so anyway. He'll either be doing that or be picking me up. So one way or the other.
Let's roll over. There is no rest for the wicket when you love your sport as well. There is no rest over the next couple of weeks. 6 weeks of world-class cricket at the Cricket World Cup. Got the US Open, Robbie Greenfield, next week.
Yeah, the change of the schedule for the major championships with the PGA taking place in May has concertinaed the major championship schedule. So they're coming thick and fast now. The Pebble Beach US Open is taking place next week. For now, though, all eyes on Muirfield Village, Jack Nicklaus's tournament, the great Jack Nicklaus, the memorial. It's one of the more prestigious events on the PGA Tour. And it's a very interesting leaderboard at the halfway stage, Tom, because there are a couple of players who they've been in the doldrums, one for a very long time, one for his level a significantly long time as well, who are up at the top near that leaderboard looking to break their duck and get back into the winner's circle. One of which, let's start with the man who's been on a long old drought. It is Martin Kaymer, a two-time major champion, a man who won the PGA Championship back in 2010. He won the US Open by, I think it was 8 shots in 2014. And subsequently, since then, he has been absolutely in the doldrums, has the German. He's not been playing very well. He's been struggling to make cuts on the European Tour. He's been struggling to make cuts on the PGA Tour. He's a great thinker. He's a great over-practicer and someone who's probably let himself get in his own way over the last few years, has Martin Kaymer. But let's hear from him now. The German, back on top of the leaderboard. He's shared in a tie with Troy Merritt and KH Lee of South Korea on 9 under par. Let's hear the thoughts of Martin Kaymer heading into the weekend and reflecting on this long time spent in golf's wilderness.
I mean, my short game was good. What I just heard from the previous interview, that I'm quite far up there in scrambling and putting. So that always is a good feel when you know your short game is spot on, that, you know, it frees you up in your long game a little bit here and there too. But I hit the ball very solid over the last 2-3 months, but it didn't really work out for me because of certain reasons. And fortunately, you know, working on my short game for the last 2-3 years, it's nice that it pays off eventually.
We were talking prior, and you said Mr. Nicklaus encouraged you to come and play. And not only are you playing here, but you are now leading on the PGA Tour for the first time in a long time. What are your emotions now heading into the weekend as you try to win on this tour once again?
Yeah, I think it's 5 years, I think, since the US Open in 2014. It's obviously a nice opportunity, you know, to have that chance of gaining some experience again in that situation. You know, always those situations, they're not really predictable. Whatever happens tomorrow and Sunday, you can't really prepare for. You can just go by experience, by calmness, trying to enjoy it. And that is pretty much what I've done, you know, for the last month or so, just trying to focus on being calm overall as a person, not only on the golf course. Because the golf shots is, you know, we can all play golf. That's not the problem. Obviously, we have some issues here and there in parts of the game. But overall, it's just our mental attitude and our general attitude towards golf that affects us playing the game.
He was another of those men that when I was having that conversation or that thought about form in sport, you know, Martin Keimer is a great example, as is Thomas Peters, I suppose, to a certain degree in golf, a man who was flirting with stardom, top 10, and they're certainly being considered for a long-term position in the Ryder Cup, etc. Again, just fallen off the face when it comes to form. But I suppose golf is one of those very difficult games where you have to maintain that individual form for a long time.
Yeah, I think there are pretty wild fluctuations. And, you know, Martin Keimer, when he started his career, he actually won his first European Tour event right here in the UAE, down in Abu Dhabi, by a good margin. And he dominated for a few years down there. Actually, what happened with Martin Keimer was he played a fade, a left-to-right shot off the tee, and became very well known for that stock shot. And he tried to change his swing to be able to hit the ball the other way so he would do better at events like the Masters, which favours that type of shot. And he actually lost his swing for a while and was hitting the ball all over the place, which is very unlike him. He's typically been a very straight hitter. And I think because Martin Keimer is such a diligent thinker and practicer, actually, sometimes in golf, that can work against you. When you've got a guy like Dustin Johnson, who does not overthink at all, many would claim he doesn't think at all. He certainly doesn't overthink. He just goes and hits the ball. And he doesn't. If you ask him what he was doing, he'd tell you, oh, I'm just doing one thing. I'm just doing one thing. If you ask Martin Keimer what he's doing, you'll be there all night. He'll be telling you 500 things that he's up to. And sometimes that level of thought, that level of competitive diligence is actually something that can work against you. But we know how difficult it is to sustain form in golf. Yeah. And another player who we thought he could do no wrong. I mean, 2015, Jordan Spieth, who's one back at the Memorial, 8 under par with every chance going into the weekend. He's been playing some good golf lately. In 2015, he won two of the four majors, and he got into a playoff in the other one. And he could have won the Open, but for, I think, he was a shot short of a playoff. So he was basically two shots short of winning all four majors in 2015. It was a staggering year. And he followed that up in 2017 with victory at the Open Championship in remarkable scenes at I think it was Royal Birkdale. When he came from behind, he trailed Matt Kuchar with 5 or 6 to play after a bit of a disaster and finished brilliantly to win that championship. And he's not won since, which we never thought would be possible for a player of his caliber. So Jordan's turning it round. He's getting back into the shape of golf where he can actually win a tournament, and he's been speaking as well to the press over there.
I probably shot the highest score I could have shot today with where I was tee to green. It felt really good. Continue to trust it. Give myself as many looks as possible. Don't force them into pins. Rely on that mid-range game with the putter, and more will go in. You know, they got a little bit, I think, slower than they were yesterday morning, but I got a feeling they'll probably not be the same speed tomorrow and Sunday, which I think will play right in my hands. I don't feel like I have to make a significant adjustment. I just stay where I'm at. Just continued work on what I'm trying to do in my swing, but sometimes I'm trying it one way or another, and I kind of found a nice way to feel like I had a, you know, a nice trap draw as a stock shot, and then work, you know, straight fades from there. That's where I normally play my best golf at, if I can eliminate the left side of the course but still have curve to the left on the golf ball. So that's what I'm trying to do. It's by no shape or form, like, you know, on its A level, but it feels really close, and it's in a position where if I just get a little bit better the next 2 days, I'm in great shape in this golf tournament.
Interesting you mentioned about Jordan Spieth there as well. He's a player I always kind of keep an eye on, and one of my favourite players to watch. And you mentioned there the kind of the cold form he's been in since that 2017 Open Championship victory at Royal Birkdale. But he has been in good form in recent weeks. He was finished, what was it? He was tied for third, was it, at the PGA Championship? And then also had a top 10 finish at Fort Worth. And like you say, he's just one shot off the pace here at the Memorial Tournament. What do you think has been the big difference in his game in recent weeks?
I think the difference that separates him always is with the putter, because he is such a great putter. I think the year that he did so well in the majors and then he won two of them, he putted just about as well as anyone who's ever had a season before. Even the great Tiger Woods back in his heyday, Jordan Spieth could rival him with a putter. He just hold everything he looked at. And that's why he's been so good at the Masters. perhaps not this year, but in recent years, he's had such a great record at Augusta because his short game is just so much better that comparatively to other players around him. His long game isn't anything all that special. He hits the ball solidly, but he's a little bit wayward off the tee at times. His irons maybe aren't as brilliant as your Brooks Koepkas, your Dustin Johnsons, but where he separates himself is on the greens. And when he fell short with the putter, when his form went away from him, he struggled because the rest of his game isn't strong enough to keep him up there. And I think getting that putting back, and he's got this unusual style where he actually looks at the hole as he puts. So rather than look down at the ball, he looks at the hole and strokes the ball at the hole. It's very unusual. Wow. From short range. Yeah, he doesn't look at the ball when he's putting.
Like the opposite of the technique you kind of, you're taught. Well,
yeah, absolutely. But it works for him. He is devastating. I cannot tell you how good this guy is on the greens when he's on. And when he is on and the rest of his game clicks, he's almost unbeatable.
And obviously
he holds everything he looks at.
The greens are one of those like kind of talked about aspects of the US Open, which is just in a couple of weeks at Pebble Beach as well. And I know that he won the 2017 AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am by four shots there. He's not played there in a major because he was only 16 the last time it was held there in the US Open. But has he got the game to win at Pebble Beach? I know he's been kind of installed as one of the early favourites for it.
Yeah, unquestionably. I mean, you just said it. He's got course experience. He's won there on the course. And he suits well. He sets up well for the US Open. The only issue would be is if he can be straight enough off the tee, because as we know with the US Open, thick rough, if you start missing fairways, it becomes almost impossible to make pars. So for Spieth, it will be very much a key of keeping the ball in play and then letting that putter do the talking on the greens.
Rob, I'm loath to throw Tiger Woods into the discussion about form at the moment, given the extraordinary year he's had. But again, given those high expectations, and we're all very apt at sort of launching more expectations on an individual after an amazing comeback, as we saw a little earlier on in the week. He's just avoided the cut, I think, before this Memorial, unlike the likes of McIlroy, who's having his own little demons at the moment. Is he going through a bit of crisis of form at the moment? Can we lump him into that?
No, I don't think we can. I think let's first and foremost deal with the fact that he missed the cut of the PGA Championship at Bethpage, completely understandably, I think. He hadn't picked up a club since winning at Augusta. I think the victory at Augusta would have taken an awful lot out of him emotionally and psychologically, and his game probably just wasn't sharp enough. It wasn't ready to that point. I think Tiger Woods is going to be one of those guys who pops up three or four times a year now and does something special. The days of us seeing him win five, six in a row, and those are definitely gone. Despite the fact that I think all that nostalgia that he conjured up at the Masters with that victory, and as great as it was and as brilliant as it made everyone watching the game who in many ways remembers him as a 21-year-old doing that. I mean, it just brought back so many memories, seeing him hug his kids and, you know, walking off the 18th green in red. And, like, it was an amazing sight. I don't think there'll be, personally speaking, and I'm sorry to say this, Danny, I know in a few hours' time you might disagree with me, but I don't think there'll be a scene in sport to top that all year, the sight of Tiger Woods in a green jacket. I think it was absolutely incredible. But at the same time, let's be realistic. He's 43 years of age. He'll now be looking to peak once or twice more, and he'll be looking to peak for the majors, no doubt about it. Those are the ones he wants. Do I give him a chance of winning at Pebble Beach? Yes, but certainly he's not among the very top favourites, I wouldn't say. I'd say he's better suited, perhaps, to the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. We'll hear his thoughts afterwards. He's 2 under par. He's only 7 back. He's still in this tournament. He's made the cut. Let's hear Tiger's brief thoughts on how his round went.
Well, it's kind of a mixed bag. I didn't really get anything going today. You know, I was just kind of plugging along. I just wasn't able to get anything really going. All of us were watching Rosie get things going on that front nine. I just wasn't able to make anything happen today.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hop lunch combo.
All right, Serena Fiennes might have had his say on the Cricket World Cup. But there's only one F when it comes to the Cricket World Cup who's cashing in at the moment. It's Big Freddy, isn't it?
I've had the highest mountains, I've had the deepest rivers. You could have it all, but life keeps moving. I could have given up them, but then again I couldn't have, because I've travelled all this way for something. Now take it in, but don't look down, because I'm on top of the world, hey. I'm on top of the world, hey.
this for a while now. Made my news to the dirt. I've been waiting to smile, eh? You know we've been in for a while, eh? Take you with me if I can. Been dreaming of this as a child. It's hard when you're falling down, and it's a long way up when you hit the ground.
Well, get up now, get up now, 'cause I'm on top of the world, hey.
Freddie Flintoff leaving his indelible mark and voice on proceedings for the Cricket World Cup. Not sure if that's affecting proceedings today. Doubleheader, Armand Monti's on top of both of those games. Tell me more.
Yep, Afghanistan versus Australia. Australia made the perfect start. Mitch Stark clean bowled Mohammad Shahzad in the first over, and Hazratul Azazai, the left-handed opening batsman, was out for a duck as well. Caught carry, ball Cummins. Australia are all over Afghanistan. Looks like another low-scoring game. In the other match, New Zealand have started off decently without losing any wicket. They're currently 26 for no wicket.
Talking of starting off decently, how's Novak getting on?
Well, he's settled up already in his last 32 tie against Salvatore Caruso, the Serbian number one seed. He's been in tremendous form on the red clay of Roland Garros, yet to drop a set, and he still hasn't done that in the opening set by 6-3. We're just at the very start of this second set at the moment. And also can tell you as well that Alexander Zverev has come through his round of 32 tie against Dusan Lajovic, winning through eventually in the end 6-4, 6-2, 4-6, 1-6, and taking the decider by 6-2.
Right, there is so much going on in the world of sport. Lest we forget, one of the oldest events in sport is about to go to post a little later on this afternoon, down on the Downs, the Epsom Downs, that is.
And with this 150 yards to go, is Nijinsky coming away?
It's a one-horse race. That's one wins it easily.
See the stars. He's going to win.
It's Galileo. He's left them toiling. Brilliant winner of the Derby.
Ouija board races away with the Vodafone Oaks.
It was written in the stars, a day of destiny, as Australia follows in her parents' footsteps and wins an Epsom Classic.
Only one horse in the picture, and Motivator runs away with the Derby.
An £85,000 late entry fee has been paid by the owners of Huey Morrison trained Telecaster for the colt to be added to the lineup for the Epsom Derby later on this afternoon. Telecaster won the Dante Stakes at York, is already fourth in the Betting for the Flat Racing Premier Classic, which gets underway later. Original entry for Telecaster was cancelled back in March, at which point he'd never set foot on a racecourse. The Aidan O'Brien trained Sir Dragonet has also been added to the field. So a maximum of 15 runners will take part in the 214th Derby, 8th of them trained by O'Brien, as well as Sir Dragonet, the Chesterfairs winner. His challenge is headed by Broome, Anthony van Dyck, both of which have been successful in Derby trials at Leopardstown and Lingfield respectively. But bear in mind also for the boys in blue, Godolphin have three strong contenders for the Blue Ribbon event a little later on, unless we not forget what they did round about 12 months ago to the day.
Hill held in by Roaring Lion as they make their way with 2 furlongs to travel. It is Massar and Hazapur with DXB. Roaring Lion, Saxon Warrior hasn't immediately picked up, and it is Massar in the blue, pursued by Roaring Lion, DXB and Hazapur, a furlong to race in the Derby, and it is Massar, Roaring Lion in second, then DXB. Saxon Warrior can't go on, but Massar can, and finally the Godolphin Blue will be carried to victory in the Derby. A first classic for Charlie Appleby, a first Derby for William Buick. Massar beat DXB, Roaring Lion, and Saxon Warrior only fourth. Hazapur was next, Delano Roosevelt, Young Rascal, didn't appear to handle the track. Then the Pentagon, Massar is home in front. The longer Dolphin wait for their blue colours to be carried to Derby victory is over. DXB second, Roaring Lion third, Saxon Warrior met some trouble but didn't pick up when in the clear. And Massar will score by over a length from DXB, Roaring Lion, and Saxon Warrior loses his unbeaten record in fourth. It is Massar who makes it a blue Saturday in the Investec Derby of 2018.
Will it be a blue Saturday for the boys in blue again this year? Well, they've got to go some this year to do so. They've got some good runners. Possibly the biggest chance for them is Line of Duty. Let's hear from the Godolphin trainer, Charlie Appleby, about the chances of Line of Duty.
Charlie Appleby, you've got three horses entered for the Investec Derby this year. We'll start with Line of Duty, very high-class colt, obviously having won in a Group 3 in France and then the Breeders' Cup, Juvenile Turf. How is he this year?
Yeah, all has gone well. He went out in Dubai there, he was under consideration for the Guineas, but we just felt that the Dantia was the right race for him to start his three-year-old career off. And, all preparations are going well, and we look forward to next week.
And he's yet to run beyond a mile one, but you think he'd probably improve for a step up and trip?
I do. As the individual himself, I feel he's always stronger. You know, the last two furlongs of his race, he gets into his, he comes into the race sort of behind the bridle and finishes off strongly. So on pedigree, you can take it into account that I feel that, again, the step up and trip's going to suit.
And ground, does he have a dependency on a particular type of ground?
So far, he's been quite versatile, but I'd say it's sound surface, and it's like a lot of these. So you never want to see these classics really run on soft ground anyway. It just becomes a bit of a slog. But as long as it's decent ground there, there'd be no complaints from, I'm sure,
love Charlie
most people.
Appleby. Love Charlie Appleby, especially in interviews. Right, it was very matter of fact. He's sort of the Harry Redknapp of horse training out there at the moment. It's going to be a big ask, isn't it? This one, Rob. I mean, there are some great runners last year. Bit of a surprise in Mazars, and never say never, yeah, as was the case last year. But just looking at the form, and look at the form of the Irish Raiders this year, it's going to be a big ask.
Yeah, there's no absolute standout horse like there has been in some years past. I mean, I think Sir Dragonet is the market favourite, and he's only had two runs in which he won both impressively. So I think you're looking at Telecaster, Sir Dragonet as the two horses that are probably going to lead the market. And we've seen so much in horse racing, literally anything can happen, as you and I both know. So it could be possible. I mean, Godolphin, Charlie Appleby certainly knows how to get his horses ready for the big races, and we've seen Godolphin have so much success over the past couple of years. I know last year was a record-breaking season for them, and they're off to a fantastic start in 2019 as well. You look at Thunder Snow, of course, at the Dubai World Cup, defending that trophy and becoming the first horse to do so. So they've certainly got the form going for them. But it really is. It's going to be a tough race. It's the ultimate 1 mile, four furlong. It's the ultimate classic, isn't it, on the Epsom Downs. I'm looking forward to it. I'll be tuning in.
Beautiful weather as well down there. They've had great weather throughout the Investec meet this year. Great result for Frankie Dettori yesterday, winning another Oaks for him as well. So yet more victory for them. He's sort of the Peter Pan of racing, isn't he?
Yes. Oh, it's incredible. I mean, what age would he be now?
He's got to be 50s, isn't he?
He's got to be. I know Kieran Fallon raced on till well into his 50s, yeah. So it's possible. But
I think Leicester went into his 60s.
It is such a tough ask to be, particularly a jumps jockey. I don't know how they do that. You're taking your life into your hands every time you get on the saddle. But for these guys, I mean, the fitness required, the discipline just to stay at their weight, is extraordinary. So for Frankie Dettori to have the career that he's had and to continue to ride these winners is quite phenomenal.
Investec Derby is underway a little later on this afternoon. Once we go off air, you'll be able to watch it live on Dubai Racing Channel. Right, time for us to take a short break then. Of course, consider our thoughts and start the build-up for the big one. In fact, for a couple of big ones as well, because we got action underway in the last weekend of action in the HSBC World 7 Series, where the USA could be crowned rugby champions by the end of the weekend. That is a possibility. We've also got the Gallagher Premiership to build up to. That's underway in an hour. There's two games ongoing in the Cricket World Cup, unless we forget the biggie. It's an all-English affair. Liverpool against Spurs. The North against the South. It's all set fair for a proper day of football, an evening of football over in Madrid. The fans are there in good voice, are posting aplenty as well.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.